Hi, welcome to a very special episode of Bageltech Mac, because we're going to talk about security. Now, it's been a perfect week for this to fall, really. It's been coming for about 3 weeks, but there was a Trojan fan this week for the Mac and outed across the internet. And we're so very, very honoured because the company that did it, we've got their chief technical officer here, Graham Cluley, who's going to fill us in on all of it. How are you doing, Graham?
I'm good, thanks. I should probably stress, I didn't do the Trojan.
You didn't make it, okay.
I know that's a conspiracy theory out there, but that one wasn't my fault.
Okay, well, forgiven then, because someone did say earlier on in the Mac show that, oh, most of these things are written by the firms that do them. And
Come on,
steady on.
You know, I've been hearing that conspiracy theory for the last 20 years. It's like we were on the grassy knoll in November 63 as the Kennedy cavalcade drove past. You know, we were there. I love conspiracy theories, but to be honest, you know, if only we had that many programmers. You know, we got them all busy writing the antivirus software. That's a full-time job. Great. The other way of thinking about it, though, is, you know, there's plenty of people writing malware for free. You know, we don't need to pay people to do it.
No, that's true. Next to him, we've got Eric Lanigan, who's here from the Twit Network and a good pal of our network as well. How you going, mate?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for letting me join in. I'm very interested in the topic of Mac security, because even the experts that I've talked to seem to disagree on whether a lot of people need to be running antivirus and doing any kind of scanning, or are they like myself, who has yet to install any antivirus on any Mac OS X computer I've ever owned or set up for anybody?
Yeah, I mean, you're here as well to ask sensible questions, because I'm well out of my depth at this point. I'm just going to shut up and watch. And last but by no means least at all, another good friend, our security expert, Mr. Mark Sunner from One Time Message Labs. How you doing, mate?
I'm fine, thanks, Ewan. Yes, so... no longer work there, so I guess I'm more kind of represent the consumer now, but I think this could be a really good opportunity to put right this incorrect myth that Macs don't get viruses once and for all. I think it's a bit wrong, really, that that view has been allowed to propagate. So good chance to set things straight.
So start us off then, chaps. The myth is that if you're running Mac OS X, then you're kind of pretty immune to the internet virus, the malware that is supposedly out there, and it's a pretty safe existence. You know, you can click and go wherever you want, and you're hunky-dory, no? Go on, Graham.
No.
Okay.
No is the answer. What I think has got a lot of people hung up about this is that there's such a huge malware problem. Let's call it malware rather than viruses, because actually these days we don't see that many Windows viruses, but what we see an awful lot of are Windows Trojans. And there's so much of that that people think it's a purely Windows problem. But in fact, we do see, not a huge amount, but we do see every week a small amount of Mac malware along with the shed loads of Windows malware. And that's why it's sensible, really, to protect your Mac from these things.
Now, off air, Mark, you were saying earlier on that there's quite a bit of history to this in terms of anti or malware for Macs.
Yes, certainly. I remember an incident, and this is I am going to show my age now, so this would be going back to sort of the late 90s. But there was an old virus by, you know, virus terms that was actually a PC macrovirus, a Word macrovirus, in fact, called Concept, which was long understood and long intercepted. And suddenly we noticed it was resurfacing and not being intercepted, which seemed very odd. And what had actually happened was Office had recently been ported to the Mac platform back then. And the teams in Redmond, the team that wrote Office for Windows were completely separate from the team that worked on Office for the Mac. So they weren't completely joined up where they should have been. And the code where the macro is located, which I think is called the P code inside the document file, basically the Mac version put it in a different place. So what happened was someone on the Mac platform, and this is in the 90s, opened up this Word document, which happened to have the Concept virus in it. When they resave that, the macro then gets saved into a new position, this odd position. So we can think of it as a mutation almost, which suddenly then repropagates this old virus. So this is something that was kind of, you know, going on a long time ago. But as Graham says, you know, that very small signal against the noise of the hundreds of thousands of PC viruses out there just doesn't seem to get much, or never did get that much airtime. And also, a huge factor of all of this is that, you know, the Windows platform has been, you know, the dominant ecosystem. And it's not just Windows either. You know, if you think, you know, as Windows was popular, that's where we saw bad stuff. But then as Office became popular, then the viruses, you know, there was this big influx of macro viruses. Then suddenly, sort of post-1995, email becomes popular. And so sure enough, viruses are now self-replicating because everyone's got Outlook, or the majority have. And I think, you know, the issue that we have here today is that OS X is becoming very, very popular. And, you know, just with the announcement this week, or no, last week, with Apple's joint venture program to now sort of reach out into the corporate world, we can see that Apple are obviously getting a lot of traction there, probably, you know, faster than even they had anticipated. And this is the moment when the platform becomes of interest to the bad guys. And so I think, you know, even in Apple's own advertising have been sailing quite close to the wind by, it's only very recently that they've changed their strap line to say, Macs don't get PC viruses, as opposed to viruses at all. Mm. And yeah, I think if you're assuming that by using a Mac, you're not going to have a problem, that absolutely isn't the case. And I think it's a good time to put that straight.
And the other way in which actually Apple have acknowledged this just recently is, I think a couple of iterations of Mac OS X ago, they issued an update which contained some very rudimentary anti-malware protection, which is designed to prevent, it only handles a handful of the Mac malware which we know about, but some of the more common Trojans, so that when you download them via Safari, for instance, and then try and run those DMG files, it will intercept them and say, well, we're not going to allow you to open that DMG file because it's a known piece of bad code in there, which was a fascinating thing which they did. But of course, that they hardly wanted to announce that feature as being one of the key new enhancements in the product when they introduced it. And I remember actually I was speaking to an Apple representative the afternoon before they announced the new version of Mac OS X, and we'd seen the beta and we'd found this functionality and we were fascinated by it, and we wanted to talk to them and say, look, is this going to be in there tomorrow? And they wouldn't confirm it to us. But sure enough, it is in there, although it's very rudimentary. It probably isn't sufficient to properly protect your Mac.
So at this point in time, the message that I'm kind of hearing, and this is me being as a brutally blunt consumer, I don't go to a lot of places where I would have perceived that I was going to get malware anyway. And I'm kind of, I'm not stupid about what pops up on my computer. You know, I've had a couple of sites in the last couple of months where there's a box saying, if you want to close this box, click OK. And there's no other way of closing the box. So I end up having to go and shut down Safari to get the box to go away, or shut down Chrome. So I'm not disengaged from the security process, but are you suggesting that there's a good chance that even though I'm fairly engaged in it and thoughtful of it, I'm becoming vulnerable now?
Well, there's a couple of things here. First of all, everyone needs to get out of their head that you only get infected on your computer by going to dangerous sites or porn sites or downloading pirated programs. I mean, that's a very 1990s attitude.
Thank you.
Today, most of the infections we see on the web are on legitimate websites which have been hacked. So, for instance, the BBC's website, Sony PlayStation's website, Business Week, New York Times. We saw just this week there were malicious adverts appearing on the Stock Exchange website as well. So, you can be anywhere on the web and get hit by one of these things. And sometimes those infections can work on Mac as well. What the bad guys do is they look at the details of the computer which is visiting them, and they say, hang on a minute, is this a client running Mac OS X which is visiting us as opposed to Windows? And it will serve up the relevant flavor of malware. But the other thing is, we're all humans. And human beings, whether they've decided to buy a Windows computer or whether they decide to buy a Mac computer, they make mistakes. And if you believe that you're about to see a naked video of Angelina Jolie, then you might make bad decisions. If you're told, here's a great utility which you want to install on your Mac because it's going to give you high definition TV or something like that, then that probably will be enough, if they've done their social engineering right, if the bad guys have got their act together properly, to trick you into installing that program.
So we're at two different levels here. We're not just talking about the fact that they've got a question for me that's definitely oriented. Are these guys looking at the cookies that they're getting back from the sites that I've previously been to and giving me option A or option B based on what they perceive I'm more likely to click yes to?
I don't think it's as sophisticated as that on the Mac. I think what they're doing is they're looking at people in their totality and the kind of things which people are interested right. in. So it will be things like, for instance, ways to make money, people
the
who
base
go around
instincts.
Thinking with, so porn, for instance, issues like that instead. So there's some sort of basic things which everyone is motivated by, quite frankly, sex and money and such like. And those tricks work just as well on Mac users as they do on Windows users. Windows users have got to get their heads out of the sand, stop thinking that they're somehow superior when it comes to security, because people are human and they will click OK if they really want to install that program or want to view that video.
Mm. Yeah, I think to keep this in context, that there aren't clearly, because of the history of the thing, there's definitely sort of more stuff out there for Windows than necessarily on the OS X platform. So it's not like if you're using a Mac now that am I potentially going to be a victim of all that historical stuff? No, but by the same token, you're not safe. And I think probably like many of us, I find myself sort of supporting my being the tech support guy for my extended family and so forth, and seeing that the Mac users, and there are an increasing number of them, are believe because of the advertising that they're not, that it's just a non-problem, I think is an issue. And also I think, as Graham is kind of saying, it could come, these tricks could come from lots of different angles, such as legitimate sites, but also Facebook, very popular. Again, the bad guys know that's probably one of the sort of hottest games in town right now. And so Facebook is a great medium just to get that URL to you, to get you to click on that button. And all of these things are platform agnostic. So it doesn't matter whether you're using a Mac or a Windows machine. And I think even, assuming that the operating system actually plays any relevance in how much security you have is probably, false.
Yeah, that's right. We are beginning to see more and more cross-platform malware. Maybe it's Java-based, for instance, or maybe it's something which will be running on a social network like Facebook. And Mark's quite right. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. There is a lot less malware for Mac than there is for Windows. Every day in our labs, we see 95,000 new pieces of malicious code for Windows.
Every day.
And every per day. So that's round about one every second. Now, for Mac, we see about 2 a week. So, it is a raindrop in a thunderstorm. It's very small in comparison, but don't think that just because it's small in comparison, you're going to feel any better if you are one of those unfortunate people who gets hit by that piece of malware. I mean, you don't get hit by most of the Windows malware either. Most of that avoids you too. So you do need to be careful about these things and, don't have your head in the sand regarding these things. Because, the malware authors know that Mac users typically aren't running antivirus software. And
that's
that
right.
makes you a soft target. And that's why you have to still be sensible, even if you are running a Mac. A couple of years ago, I made my wife throw out the last Windows computer in our house. I said, you know what? You're putting my career in jeopardy. Let's throw out the Windows computer. And now we only run Macs at home. I love Apple Macs, even though I'm telling you, you should run an antivirus on your Apple Mac. Because they are more elegant and beautiful machines and they just work, right? But they can still get malware. And that's why up there in the top bar, I've got my little antivirus icon as well as all the other programs I'm running.
Eric, you've been pretty quiet so far. Is there anything that's come up that you think, I've got to ask this?
Oh, sure. First of all, so Graham, how many Mac users would you say are infected or have at one point been infected with malware that actually is doing something harmful to them, as opposed to just some, some proof of concept that is inert?
Really, really hard to say. I mean, because most people, when infected by Windows malware as well, there's no visual indication. You're not, you know, in the old days, the viruses used to, you know, have a green caterpillar eating up your letters on the screen or letters cascading down. Malware these days doesn't announce its presence. And because most Mac users aren't running anything at all, they're probably completely oblivious if they are infected. My suspicion is that most Mac users aren't infected. You know, I'm pretty sure that's true. It's probably going to be a small percentage of users. Certainly when we released our free antivirus for Mac home users last November, we did begin to get a surprising number of reports from people who had not only found some Windows malware or cross-platform malware, but were also seeing some Mac malware on their computers too. So some people have been encountering that, but to really take a temperature gauge on this is really hard because most people aren't doing anything about it.
And what is the mechanism by which Mac users get Mac viruses? As opposed to, because I'll tell you, for example, I've stumbled on the occasionally shady site where all of a sudden I'll see an EXE downloading in the background. But because I know it's Safari, I feel like, oh, ha, 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 you know, I'll just hit cancel and I'm none for the worse. But let's suppose that that was something that the Mac could execute and could harm it. How often does something like that happen, that Mac users get infected just during basic browsing?
Well, we are encountering those sort of incidents occurring. Obviously, it has to be a DMG file or something like that, which the person is running at the end of it. It can exploit vulnerabilities in the browser. I mean, a lot of people have Safari, for instance, set up to automatically download DMGs and open them up. You know, it's not a security setting which I would recommend. I think you have to make a more conscious decision than that.
Now, I do that, actually. I do have it set to automatically open. So tell me what... So suppose I were to download an infected DMG... what then happens? What happens during that auto mounting process that makes me vulnerable?
So most of the malware which we've seen so far, most of it, if it's a DMG file, you will basically begin the installation process. So at some point, your macOS 10 system is going to ask you probably for your administrator username and password.
Yes.
And the reaction we often get from Mac users at that point is, oh, you know, I would never be so stupid as to enter my administration username and password. Hang on a minute. Think how many times you enter that during the course of the day. And if you are genuinely interested in installing an application, if you've been to, you can see the videos up on our website of some of these dangerous Mac websites which claim to offer utilities and yeah, you want to install it. So of course you're going to enter your username and password. That's the social engineering bit. That's the bit where they try and trick you into making a bad decision, just like they do on Windows 7 as well, where they try and trick you into installing the program.
And so just so I'm clear on the low-level mechanics here. So I download a DMG from a place that let's say claims it's the world's greatest utility, and it turns out it's just a, you know, it's just a Trojan. So the DMG downloads, it mounts automatically. It asks me for an administrator password just to mount it, I guess. Do I have that far
it's,
right
it's
so
like,
far?
It's like installing any other program. To actually install it, it's normally going to have to ask you for your admin username and password to get your permission if you're not already running as an administrator in your Mac session.
So it has to be an installer then. It has to be one of those programs, not the type where you drag and drop to the applications folder, but actually is running an installer that does things in the background with a status bar that may often not tell you what it's up to. Is that right?
Typically the ones we've seen have done that. That's right.
Right.
Okay. So things like JarLabC and RSplug are recent Trojans which do exactly that.
That's kind of interesting because I would have perceived that the ones that get you to go through an installer process would give you a greater opportunity for avoiding it. But actually what you're saying there is that the drag and drops, which are usually the cheap freebies from things like Mac Update and so on, are probably 99% okay.
Well, I mean, they could potentially be exploited as well. But what I'm saying is of the ones we've seen, that I mean, there are two primary families which have been causing a lot of trouble on the Mac malware scene, which is JarLav. Often you'll see it referred to as JarLabC. And there's another one called RSplug as well. And those both have a sort of installation process. Now, what's interesting is how they've been distributed on occasion. So sometimes they've been distributed in the form of pirated apps. So it may claim to be a new version of, I don't know, Photoshop, for instance, and you download it from a torrent. And you may well say, well, you know, anyone who's downloading pirated software deserves whatever they get as a result. But for instance, we saw Guy Kawasaki, who's was a huge Apple evangelist, very popular Twitter user. His Twitter account posted a link saying, check out this sex video. I think it was one of the girls from, it was Leighton Meester, who stars in a TV show called Gossip Girl. And imagine how many people clicked on that. Mm. And they got taken to a website where it says, here's the thumbnail. You know, we're about to show you what you're going to get. And if you were running a Mac, it would display a message just like it would on Windows saying, oh, you're going to have to install an update, you know, like a codec or something like that in order to view this video. And then you'll be able to see Leighton in all of her glory. And, you know, that's been endorsed by someone famous via Twitter. It's been spammed out to a million people or however many followers he has. And people will install code like that. And thus, that's how they get infected. It also happened with Erin Andrews, who's the TV sports presenter. You know, there was a big hoo-ha because she'd been secretly filmed in her hotel room. And so the bad guys instantly jumped on the bandwagon and pretended that they had a video of her. And so people were going there and installing that.
There's a question in the chat room here, Graham. So with Mac being what it is and Windows being Windows, does it mean that Linux, pretty much aka Ubuntu, is at risk as well in the same way, since that Mac and Linux are running off a Unix system? Does that commonality create issues for both?
Yes, we see malware for, you know, Linux, Ubuntu as well. We do encounter that. In fact, probably the very earliest malware infection, one which affected the biggest percentage of the internet, was way back like 30 years ago when we saw the Morris worm. I think it took out around about 25% of the internet then. We still encounter computers, and you can read about this on our blog as well, which are controlling botnets and which have been compromised, which are running Linux. So there are Linux boxes out there which are infected as well. Again, I should stress the number of pieces of malware for both Mac and Linux and Ubuntu, et cetera, are tiny in compared to Windows. Mm. So there is much, much more malware for Windows, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And we are seeing more and more of this stuff being written. I doubt it's ever going to catch up with Windows, but it would still make sense because Macs are such fantastic machines. You can do so much terrific work with them to protect your data. You know, have Sync run in the background. I mean, we offer Sync for free. You've got nothing to lose here to protect your computer.
Yeah, sure. Mark, you're about to stick.
The point that is really sort of burning me, I suppose, is, and you know, all these things are absolutely true, but I think the thing that is most worrisome is that the big problem doesn't exist yet. It's coming. You know, it's the thing that is yet to happen. And it is definitely a case of if, not when. And when it does happen, there will be, you know, a very large number of people who saw the, you know, the Mac and PC Guy ads and Justin Long, you know, looking like he can't be contaminated. And then when the thing that hasn't happened yet does hit home, there'll be so many people thinking, well, I thought this couldn't happen to me. And I think that's the thing to worry about is not what can I do for all this stuff that is out there right now. It's to have a mentality that is sufficiently paranoid to protect you, to want to protect yourself from the thing that hasn't happened yet.
Where do we sit in terms of the commonality across platform functions like Flash, Java, those kind of things? How does the security sit with those? Are we looking at that as being a big vulnerability going forward because of the fact that it can be used across all platforms? Or is there a big code change there that really means that isn't going to be just like one magic bullet infects all three platforms?
We certainly saw malware targeting Java just a couple of months ago, which worked on Mac, Windows, and Unix. The Bunana worm it was which did that. And of course, Adobe Flash. I mean, Adobe is the new Microsoft in the hacker's eyes. It's ubiquitous software which everybody is running. And so the bad guys are constantly looking for vulnerabilities, whether it be in the PDF reader or whether it be in Flash as well, to try and exploit them.
One of the things that interests me, though, as well in that is that certainly Flash is a hog. So I've had Flash issues on laptops, etc., and I ended up, you know, taking it off, and now I've got to the stage, thanks to Don McAllister, of not running Flash anywhere and just using Chrome if I've got a Flash site that I want to go to because of the fact that it's native with it. But Where's the objective evidence that something's wrong if you've got a system like Flash that is notorious for slowing your system down or making it look like bad things are going on? I mean, it's, and you know, most of, certainly as a Mac user who's not that well qualified or educated, I look at a slow Mac running Flash and just think it's Flash straight away. So, you know, where do I then go from, you know, where's the objectivity that makes me raise the flag and say there could be an issue here?
I don't think that really exists anymore. I think in the old days, we could tell when a computer was virus infected because it was slowed down and sluggy and, you know, all kinds of problems like that. Today, computers are so quick and your internet connection is so quick compared to when we were doing dial-up that you can't tell with the naked eye that a computer has been hit, which is why people rely on their security software so much to spot these things. By the way, there's one thing, another kind of attack which we have seen happening on Macs has been the growing problem of fake antivirus, also known as scareware. Mm. So this is very commonly seen on Windows, but we've seen it on Macs as well, where you're basically frightened into believing there's a security problem with your computer. And because you've read in the media about identity theft and losing your credit cards and all this, you're sort of going, oh, crumbs, I've got to protect myself. And you're then tricked into installing. I mean, there's a great piece of social engineering. You're tricked into installing this fake antivirus program and paying through the nose, and you're giving your credit card details directly to the bad guys. So But going back to your main point, I don't think you can tell. You're right, Flash can be a pain, but you can't really tell these days if your computer is malware infected without specialist tools.
Eric, you got a question?
Yeah, Graham, I have a question. So would it be accurate to say that all Mac malware has to come in to the computer in the form of an installer?
No. I mean, obviously, you could receive it in the form of things like scripts as well. So it doesn't have to be an installer. I'm just referring to the most common ones which we've seen so far. You can also, of course, get these cross-platform attacks, as Mark was just saying. There are things spreading virally via the likes of Facebook, for instance, where it's all going on in the cloud. Okay, it doesn't even have to touch your operating system. That's kind of irrelevant.
Okay, well, actually, okay, that's a really good thing. I want to ask you about that one second, but let me just go down this path because I'm just trying to make sure that I'm clear on this. So it may not have to be installer, could be a script. I get that. Does it have to require authentication? Do you have to be presented with a username and password prompt in order for malware to do its thing on the Mac?
No, you don't. So, for instance, with the recent Bunana Trojan, which is a cross-platform Java Trojan, for instance, it could install code and run code on your computer, didn't require a username and password.
And that's an example of... is there terminology to describe this, the differences? What kind of terminology is there to describe, let's say, a malicious application that no matter how secure the operating system is, the vulnerability of an ignorant user saying, sure, install yourself, here's my password, go ahead, no rock solid OS 10 could ever prevent against that. Do we call those a different name than something that sneaks in under the radar and gives root access without ever asking for a password?
I think you might be onto something here. I think there is a lot of confusion in the Mac community regarding, you know, what is a virus, what is a Trojan, what is a worm, and there is a feeling that, you know, oh well, to be a real virus or a real worm, it has to spread without any user interaction whatsoever. And that simply isn't the case. That's not how you think of Windows malware. If you think about things like the Anna Kournikova worm, for instance, or the I Love You bug, which hit Windows users incredibly hard, those were all worms which required user interaction. And the vast majority of malware does require user interaction, does require the user to make a mistake. It's only occasionally when we see things like, Mark can probably remember some of these, Sasa and Code Red and so forth, which didn't require any user interaction at all and spread like wildfire.
Now, if I may interrupt you, because what I'm trying to get to specifically is, more specifically than user interaction, I guess I'm curious about the username and password, because, you know, we've always heard that on Windows, because of the way, for instance, that Microsoft Outlook and Office run these macros, there are ways that users can execute code. And also going back to, you know, Windows XP and earlier, where the user permissions were not there. It was not a robust system of user permissions. I have always been told that macOS 10, by its nature, by the nature of Unix, requiring users and authentication for even certain system processes, that because it requires a password, that makes it more secure. So I guess when you say user interaction, what I'm trying to get to also is, let's also distinguish user interaction between double-clicking something or going to a website versus offering actual password authentication to a prompt.
Are we not sort of really splitting hairs here and sort of brushing over the elephant in the room? If you're talking about the sort of ring protection from a programmatic standpoint, you could sort of say that Windows 7 is probably up to scratch or up to the same level. Certainly, previous versions of Windows could definitely get infected with ease without any kind of user interaction, and that's sort of neatened up now. But I think regardless of how tricky it is to compromise the OS is irrelevant. If somebody wants to target that platform, they will find a way. I don't think splitting hairs on.
I don't know if it is splitting hairs there, Mark. Sorry to interrupt there, but correct me if I'm wrong here, Eric. But what I think you're saying is, what have I got to do? Tell me what I can and can't do here. What have I got to do to get this wrong, to get this right, to make sure that I am protected? Because I mean, certainly from my viewpoint, I've listened to a lot of conversations around virus and malware for Mac, and I follow a general set of principles that I've worked out for myself, but I don't know whether those principles are actually right or wrong. I don't tend to click on stuff that I think might be bad, but what I think I'm worried about here is what's developing here is I don't understand when I'm right and wrong anymore. Is that the point, Eric?
I think it's too hard to tell anymore. In the old days we were able to say, don't go to dodgy websites,
Yeah,
but
no,
now
that's not it.
The website can look entirely legitimate. Or it can be a legitimate website which has been hacked as well, which is offering these things. In answer to the question, I don't believe that we have a different terminology for these things, but the vast majority of what we see both on Mac and on Windows requires that user interaction. It typically exploits social engineering tricks rather than vulnerabilities. Most of these things, sometimes they will throw in some vulnerabilities as well to help them along, but fundamentally, it's a problem between the keyboard and the chair. And that's the same person who might be using a Mac one day and using Windows the other day. And that's what.
Okay, good. I agree with you. Just so we're clear, I don't disagree. We are on the same page with that. And so I'm just trying to drill down to the specifics and find out the mechanism by which this happens. So let's start from a concrete example. For the last decade or more, people who have been advising Windows users have always said, don't open attachments. Don't even open emails that may contain attachments. You mentioned the Anna Kournikova virus, and if I recall, that was one where there was an attachment that looked like a JPEG or something, but it was really like .jpeg.exe. So on Windows, there was always the risk that simply double clicking on a file that all you had to do, double click or open an email, and that's it. It's in. It's done. Never prompted you for anything. It's just in. First of all, and I only mean this to be a minor question. Are Mac users susceptible to that kind of attack?
Well, they obviously will get a prompt, but we have to realize is Windows users get a prompt now as well. When they receive something like that, if they try and run a program like that, Windows will pop up and say, oh, are you sure about this? Do you want to go ahead with this?
Yeah,
you're going to authorize this? So, Windows has one of the pains a lot of people had with Windows Vista, for instance, was that Microsoft realized they had to try and make a more secure operating system, and users, by and large, went, ugh, how irritating is this? And it's put the emphasis upon me to make this decision as to whether to run this
deny
program.
Deny or allow.
And similarly, I think many Mac users are just like automatically, whenever that prompt comes up for a system admin username or whatever it is, they will just go and enter it and just get on with it, for goodness sake.
I mean, I think Eric.
Oh, so just to be totally clear then, any Mac virus that affects, or Trojans, malware that affects Mac users has to have a user's password entered. And so then from that point, then it becomes social engineering. It's trying to convince someone to do that. And so let's say there's even a higher level threshold. Let's say you've trained people that if you think you're clicking on a JPEG and it asks you for a password, stop right there. But if it's an application that maybe you think is a good installer, like some kind of software utility that turns out to run an installer and do this in the background, that would be the other way to get infected. Am I right there so far?
You're largely correct, but there are, for instance, cross-platform attacks, as we were saying, yeah. Facebook attacks, things like the Bunana Trojan, which do not ask you for authentication.
So that it is fair game all round.
And indeed, if there's a vulnerability in Safari or in your email client or in your PDF reader, etc., then you know that may be a way for code to get onto your computer as well and activate.
That's good.
Right. So that's the other way. Like I remember one of the recent tricks to jailbreak an iOS device was that it used a PDF exploit. And I know we've seen reports of, you know, Safari allows malicious code to be exploited to be run and to gain root access in the background silently with no user authentication, right? So there's also that risk?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Now, if you would ask your question if you wanted, because the next thing I wanted to dig into was what you mean by cross-platform viruses and how they work.
So there's a variety of different things. Obviously, lots of people are putting much more information on the web. There are social networks where the platform. So you could basically say this is a Facebook application virus rather than something which is Windows or Mac specific. There are also Java operating system independent malware as well. We saw an example of that spreading around earlier this year.
So I think. Let's put on pause for just 1 second, though, because I'm intensely interested in that, too. And I want to ask you about that, about the viruses that affect only within platforms like Facebook. But let's keep on the kinds of things that Mac antivirus software can detect, can prevent against, can tell you that you are infected with. Mm-hmm. What kinds of cross-platform JavaScript vulnerabilities are you talking about?
Feel free to plug your own product here at any point, Graham, as well, because you do give away a free Mac antivirus, don't you?
Oh, it's too tacky to do that, but yes, it was free for Mac. So the Bunana Trojan, I'm trying to find it in my notes here because one of my colleagues wrote about that one, I think, on our site earlier on this year. The Bunana Trojan runs entirely inside your browser. It's running it's a Java application rather than for JavaScript, which is probably an important definition. I'm not sure I actually have that one written down.
No worries.
In front of me here. Let me just blah, blah, blah.
So perhaps a Java VM would require, would prompt you for authentication, thereby allowing the program inside the VM to do whatever it wants?
I don't think it required authentication at all. If you already had the Java client on your computer, it would just run it.
It's one of the vulnerabilities that the Mac community's kind of got, this open community-ness that you know, it festers its way through in Mac World as a show each year, that people turn up because they want the community element of it. And there's always people helping other people, isn't there, by, you know, Doug's Scripts, for example. I'm not suggesting that Doug's Script has got any malware associated with it at all. You know, I use them myself and they're fantastic. But if there's a Doug out there who's not as honest and open, is that a real route in? Because, I mean, Doug's Scripts don't require any authentication at all, do they? I mean, once you just click on those and they run the script or you put them in the scripts folder, life's, you know, it appears instantly on your menu bar. So that thing's clearly already in the program. It's ready to run and ready to go.
Yeah, and it can do anything which a regular script can do with your user permissions. So
if the program, if you get
information, for instance,
so for example, I know iTunes doesn't do this, but let's say you'd got iTunes and it actually already had access, you'd given it always access for your security data for password and so on. I can't remember what's the name of the damn thing that holds your password, but there we go. If you've put the script into an already enabled program, that's total access.
Don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar enough with the scripts on Mac OS X as to exactly, you know, what limitations they might or might not have.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is that there's a lot of applications that go to do something and they'll say, we need access to your password in order to carry on going for this. And you tend to click yes on those very easily, because if you wanted to authorize them every time they wanted to go and get the data that you've asked them to get for you, they really would be a pain in the backside. You'd never get any work done at all.
Yes.
So you tend to say, yes, always allow my password. Now, if you then get a malicious script and put it in that program, you've given carte blanche to that program already. If nothing else is picking that out as a separated piece of code, then it's going to get every permission that program's already got, surely.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds plausible. I'm not sure if we've seen any Mac malware which does that. It feels a little bit to me like some of the pre-Mac OS X malware which we used to see, and I think many people have more encounters with than in more recent years in terms of the sort of scripting attacks which we used to see.
Question in the chat room here. If we're seeing that a lot of these are cross-platform and it's the browser that's then bringing them in, is there an onus on the browser to become more secure now and take up the lead on this?
Well, wouldn't that be nice? You know, I mean, it'd be good to have as many doors as possible scanning and checking. You know, you don't want to just rely upon one guard to look after your prison cell, do you? So I think we would all love browsers to improve. And certainly the browsers have generally been getting stronger and stronger and taking a more serious attitude to security. We've seen in recent years several of the browsers begin to, for instance, warn you about phishing sites.
We've seen the
search engines begin to intercept malicious sites as well. So, I mean, we work with some of the big search engines and they scour the web and run a sort of a tweaked version of our antivirus engine to help them determine which are dangerous sites and hopefully block users from going to them.
Another question here from the chat room that kind of leans on to a question I wanted to ask as well anyway. The question is, clearly Mac users need educating. How is that going to be done is the question. But based on the fact that you were saying earlier on, it's so difficult to quantify the size of the problem, we have absolutely no idea how many computers are out there are potentially affected as Macs or not. Until there's a shock, a quake, a mass reaction or mass understanding of infection, how the hell do you go about educating Mac users? I mean, we sat on a Mac show 2 weeks ago knowing that this was coming up, and I did a quick poll of the people that were there, well-informed individuals, how many people are running Mac antivirus. I was the only person in five.
Yeah.
Well, my point is rather than, you know, talking about the whys and wherefores of how strong is Unix versus Windows, I think that the chances are someone using Windows is probably likely to be running an antivirus program of some description, and the chances are if someone's got a Mac, they're not. And you know, I think, how do we fix that? Well, I think it's public forums like this, but there needs to be, you know, more of it, and to sort of debunk this myth, because I think it's something like the Mac community, but it's become sort of self-perpetuating, and I think that's dangerous, because you know, it's a softer target for the bad guys, for sure.
Are Mac users ostriches with their heads in the sand? Or is that overstating it?
I think Mac users who aren't running antivirus are, yeah.
What I mean, percentage I, of Mac I users are infected
innocently
right now?
Clicked on links and I've been taken to a web page and Sophos antivirus running on my Mac has intercepted them and say, hang on, there's a malicious iframe here, or it's going to redirect, you know, and I've been protected as a result of running my antivirus. And
I would like to make just one other point. Let me come at this from the angle of the consumer now, because there is perhaps another reason why Mac antivirus has been perceived as a bad thing. Because it is at a much more embryonic stage, both from a threat perspective and an AV platform perspective, it has meant that the AV tools from a number of vendors haven't been that great. You know, to install them on OS X definitely has a performance impact. And so, you know, with the best one in the world, it doesn't matter how scared you are or how paranoid you are, if using an antivirus product means that your machine, especially if it's an older one, starts to grind to a halt, you're probably going to deinstall that program. And I think the Mac community has suffered because it hasn't had the attention from the AV vendors in the past that Windows AV vendors have had for a very long time. And I think it's only now that these programs or the new versions, and Sophos is a good example. So I'm agnostic, so I can blow Graham's trumpet on this one. The thing I like about the Sophos tool is it's very lean and mean, doesn't slow the machine down, whereas other products definitely do have a sort of a perceptible footprint, and I think that also puts people off.
Well, that tends to be the always on scanning functionality, doesn't it? That slows the machine down. I mean, and I've had this with Sophos, and your customer services team have helped me out a great deal with this in the past, Graeme. That when I've downloaded a new version or reinstalled it, initially the always on functionality is what seems to make the machine a little bit slower. And when you switch that off, things get faster again. But I agree with Mark there that the free version that I've used on a couple of the Macs doesn't seem to do that.
Right. Well, it is always running in the background, the free version which you have. At least I hope it is. That is how I would recommend running it. But of course, you can change the settings. So, for instance, you may tell it don't look inside archived files. You know, that's only necessary when you actually unarchive them. Mm. And sometimes there can be performance hits, you know, if you've gone ultra paranoid. But I mean, we've struggled with this because we've often had feedback, not from businesses. Actually, businesses totally seem to get the need to protect their Macs. They often have a policy, you know, any computer that comes in here needs an antivirus on it. But from the consumers, and that's why we last year thought, you know what, we don't try and sell it to consumers. Why don't we just give it away? It might get us some more brand awareness. It could be good for us in terms of marketing. And we're doing something decent for that community who haven't even tried to run antivirus to find out what it's like. Mm. And, you know, that's why we went through that process. Now, I'm delighted, actually, that I've seen some of our competitors since then release their own antivirus products for Mac and begin to put their toe in the water and say, well, look, we've got a solution as well, you know, and the other ways to protect your Mac, which people are welcome to try out because there's nothing to lose now. If you decide you don't like our free antivirus, that's fine. Uninstall it. You know, good luck to you. I hope you don't get infected. I genuinely hope you don't. But, you know, it is available there. And it's rather like people who, you know, used to think, oh, backups, what a pain are they? What a nuisance. You know, it just gets in the way of my work and it slows down because Time Machine's running in the background while I'm trying to do my work. And it's like, you know what? You need to make backups. Even though hard drives are a lot more reliable these days than they used to be.
Go on, Eric.
Okay, so I have to say, guys, I mean, this really has me fascinated, but I'll tell you my confusion. You know, I have never run an antivirus program on a Mac since the dawn of OS X, since, you know, I guess the year 2000. And everyone I know who has Macs has never run antivirus. And the official line from Leo Laporte and everyone on Twitter has always been, Macs don't need the antivirus. And yet you guys seem so concerned and see it as such a necessity. But so far in this conversation, I don't understand where your concern is coming from yet. I don't see the risk of likelihood, and I don't see, so I guess I don't see the likelihood that the Mac users will be infected, and I don't see the danger of what the infection, even if you pass that 0.00001%, what the danger is of actually having malware on your computer.
I could chime in here, I think, actually, and I've done a fair bit of work with behavioral psychology through the job that I used to do, and getting people to make a decision where they don't perceive a negative associated with it, or they perceive negative of being a future consequence, is the most difficult thing to achieve. If someone sees something as a possible negative consequence that is significantly further ahead and of low probability, then they'll go ahead and do it anyway because they perceive the immediate positives over and above that. So things like smoking and so on is a classic example of it. Okay, fair enough. I enjoy the cigarette right now, but I might die in 25 years, but hey, it's 25 years and it's still only a mite. In terms of the software side of things and the antivirus stuff, the way I look at it is to take what I've learned from that programming and experience and say to myself, well, hang on, you know, what's the positive, what's the negative? Okay, it might be a negative future uncertain event, but I've got a positive that's next to me that's immediate, guarantees me control, and it hasn't cost me a penny. And that's why I wanted to do this show.
Which is, so I'm clear, what is that positive?
The positive is I get protection for no cost immediately. I don't understand a discussion against why not to do it. That's what I can't fathom. If you were talking about Graeme was charging me £50 for it, and he's not, he's charging me 135, then then I could possibly understand a discussion around why would I not do it. And I really wanted to do this show because I feel the vulnerability, not because I actually think that the probability is any higher than you're saying, but what I'm, and this is where I think Mark's coming from, there is a wealth of risk that is building and building and building and building, and by the time it pops, it'll be too late, is my thought process on it. Am I right, Mark? Am I putting words in your mouth there?
Yeah, no, that is where I'm coming from. I mean, I'm trying to, you know, think of an analogy that isn't trite, but it's
Yellowstone Park's caldera.
Trying to convince the you know, Amish community to take a malaria shot. You know, just because you haven't got it yet doesn't mean that it isn't coming.
Well, malaria is not strong in Pennsylvania.
Let me try this a different way then. So let's suppose there are two risks here: risk of infection, and risk of symptoms. Risk of damage. We'll call that the same thing. Risk of infection. Let's start and just a quick statistical answer. Risk of infection is what would you say?
Oh, I have no idea. And I have no idea for one of those either.
That's exactly the point that we made at the start, though, I think, is the size of the problem can't be quantified because it is unknown who is infected and who is not.
Okay. So let's assume you're infected. Risk of something bad happening to you is what? And in that question, I'm trying to separate out all your data is destroyed and it emails itself to everyone in your address book versus I'm now part of a botnet sleeper cell that may or may not ever happen.
I think that's the point that Graham made. Again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, mate. Please correct me. But the point is that the crux of malware is no longer to be obvious. It is there to steal as much data as it possibly can, as silently as possibly it can, and as quickly as it possibly can before it can be found.
It's unlikely to want to delete your data because that's what the teenage virus writers used to do 10, 15 years ago. It's now about stealing your credit card information. It's about using your computer to send out spam or to launch denial of service attacks. It's to try and monetize your computer, maybe by stealing your identity or displaying pornographic pop-ups on your screen or installing ransomware. So from ransomware, for instance, I encountered a couple recently. It wasn't on a Mac, I stress to say, but I encountered a couple recently who had images of child abuse appear on their computer, and they were told unless they wired hundreds of dollars to Russia, these would begin to carry on appearing. And of course, they were mortified, and they weren't going to take their computer to PC World to try and get it fixed because they thought the police would be called.
I totally agree with you there. That is horrible. That would be terrifying. But it seems like that's only on Windows right now.
Can I have one last stab at this? I appreciate that, you know, I'm trying to sort of conjure up a future problem, one that hasn't existed yet, and therefore it's a lot harder to quantify. But I think part of the problem here is a factor is the fact that no one is protecting themselves. It's not only the fact that the OS X install base has become big enough to be attractive, it's also because the majority of people don't protect themselves. It's those factors coming together that creates this perfect storm. You know, in the same way as early email viruses succeeded was because there was a critical mass of people using the right version of Outlook, the version that could be corrupted, you know, hadn't patched it, meant that the perfect storm existed. So then the viruses were created. Right now, it's the fact that nobody protects themselves or the critical mass don't protect themselves is making it more and more attractive, and it is, you know, makes this the problem will become, you know, sort of self-driving or self-fulfilling almost. I know that sounds like a real sort of doomsayer perspective, but I really believe that part of the issue is this belief, this myth that Macs don't get viruses. Unfortunately, it could be a component of the
parallels
problem.
With the real world virus are exactly that. This is 1985 and saying, why should I practice safe sex? Because only 200 people in the world have got AIDS.
I totally agree. The fantastic thing about the Mac community is they have so much passion. They love their devices. You know, they're all really excited. Steve Jobs turned up on stage the other day and it's like, fantastic. The guy's, you know, not gone yet. It's terrific. And you need to be a responsible member of that community, because if you get infected, okay, maybe you don't care what happens to your computer, but you are going to be passing that malware onto other users as well, or launching denial of service attacks against innocent companies. And so for that reason, you should not be a Typhoid Mary. You should protect your home computers, whether they be Windows or Mac.
If I may run with the extremity of Ewan's example, where is our Mac AIDS? What is it? Literally, what example is there out there in the wild?
So the most common ones which we encounter are Trojans like Jarlav and RSplug. So with those, they can either, for instance, redirect your DNS settings so that when you go browsing, you end up on criminal websites which earn money through affiliate schemes, the more clicks which they get, so you can't browse to the websites which you want. So that's one of the techniques which can be used by one of these pieces of malware.
I'm sorry. Say that again. So it's diverting your DNS, and that does what? That the result of that is what?
The result is of that is that the criminals make cash, because it takes you to a different website from the one which you want. So you end up being taken to, for instance, a website which has advertising, which earns them commission as a result of you that.
you type in google.com, but what you don't realize is the host that you're pulling for is actually in Russia.
Okay. And that is in the wild, or that is proof of concept?
No, it's in the wild. It's out there. It's planted on websites. Sometimes they create websites for the social engineering. Other times they will hack legitimate websites and serve it as. So it's financially motivated malware. That's most of what we see here. And that's why there's such an opportunity. These are organized criminals. They used to be pimply little kids. And now it's the Russian gangs, and it's gangs from around the world who've turned to crime on the internet. And what they're finding more and more is that Windows computers are running antivirus software. Okay, and we as vendors are getting better and better at protecting those Windows computers. Of course, there are some Windows users who aren't updating, and the bad guys have a history of writing Windows malware, so it might be easier for them to write another example of Windows malware. But boy, oh boy, imagine what they're going to find if they start targeting Macs which are unprotected and use the same social engineering tricks to try and get past them. And we see things like Scareware, which is designed to try and trick you into handing over your credit card details. We've seen backdoor Trojan horses. Those ones appear to be more experimental, but the opportunity there is for the criminals to break into your computer and steal all of your information, basically spy upon what you're doing. And if you're using your Mac, for instance, for business purposes, that could be damaging to your phone.
I think what I'm getting at is I'm not hearing the example so far of why, for instance, it wouldn't be is just as easy for a Mac user to say, if I'm 1% of 1% who gets affected, then I will run an application that will say, oh, here's an infection, and now it's gone. Whereas on Windows, I recognize and agree with the risk that at any given moment you could be attacked. I would never run Windows without an antivirus. But on a Mac, it seems like there are so few viruses or so few malware in the wild, and the ones that are there do so little harm to the user that the cost of having an antivirus program constantly running, constantly scanning your system, constantly monitoring any script, any app, any executable that's run, and whatever subscription or one-time purchase cost of that software, the cost of protecting yourself, it seems like a hypochondriac. It seems like you're putting all this effort, time, and CPU utilization into a very minor risk, both of likelihood of infection and severity of infection.
But you say you haven't installed antivirus on your Mac for 10 years, and the financial cost is zero.
Yeah, that's my point.
You need to kind of, try it and see if it really is that painful, right?
Stick it on your Mac this afternoon.
Who knows what we might find on your Mac?
I think that so what you're saying there, Eric, is the problem isn't there yet. So, why should I bother? And I think that an issue is the fact that everybody also thinks the same thing, which is the perfect fertile ground for something to basically now take off. And I guess that's the point, that, you know, when it does happen and a lot of people end up with it by getting a bloody nose from it, they will have contributed to the problem by keeping alive this perception that, you know, why should I bother?
I've got to say, I'm having a hard time with understanding a logical reason why not to do something that is free.
Or at least give it a try.
At least give it a try, exactly.
So there is no performance hit by running this constantly, because I mean we know that there is a performance hit on Windows by having antivirus that runs constantly.
Well, Eric, just for me as an example, you know how pushed we are for processor speeds here, for things like running Logic and for running the video stuff and that kind of thing. And I've I see no difference with the Sophos running and not running on any of those pieces of software.
Of course, it's doing more. Your computer is doing more if you're running antivirus as well as doing, you know, if you weren't running antivirus. But is it noticeable?
No.
You know, I don't notice it on mine.
It just kind of seems like you're saying, you know, there a salesman shows up at my door and he's got this big detector. He wants to fill my house full of detectors for gremlins, and he says, well, you never know when a gremlin would show up. I mean, why not be protected if it's free now? And I say, well, if one does show up, then I'll worry about it, but right now I know of none that even exist in the world.
But that's the point.
Well,
is that
gremlins don't exist. Malware for Mac does exist, right?
We've established.
You can see them for yourself, and there are plenty of testimonies from people. If you can go on our website, we've actually had people reporting since last November. We've had around about 300,000 people install it and are still running our antivirus for free on their Macs, and they've begun reporting to us some of their infections and things that which they're finding. So we've written about this, about people who found not only Windows malware on the Macs but Mac malware as well. So it is happening out there. But you've got to stop thinking that somehow Steve has sprinkled some magic crystals into your Mac, which somehow make it immune from these threats. It's simply not the case, I'm afraid.
I think the question, the real overriding question that's come to me from what the discussion has been is, are you saying that I only have to have me click something and be a bad user in order to get malware? And I'm understanding that your answer to that is no, it's not the case. You could act perfectly normally and perfectly sanely and perfectly vigilantly and still have a problem here.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the level of social engineering on these things is so good now that even if you are a paranoid, vigilant user, chances are you're going to be putting your name or your password into something which absolutely looks and smells completely legitimate. And so having the safety net of something in the background that is actually looking for code being executed that shouldn't be, I think, you know, why not do that?
I think Mac users need to stop thinking about the Windows problem. I think that's actually the problem. Imagine Windows didn't exist, right? And there was never any Windows malware problem and you weren't hearing all those scare stories. This today, we would be like, you know, the earlier years of the PC virus problem in terms of the actual amount of it. And there was no shortage of people who recognized they did need to protect themselves in case they got hit by these things. Now, the problem has got much, much worse for Windows, right? And we all acknowledge there's much more malware out there for them. But that doesn't mean it's non-existent for Mac. So
are we in agreement?
Don't be so obsessed with Windows.
Are we in agreement that antivirus and anti-malware software for Windows historically has slowed performance?
It's doing something else, so it has to have an impact, but it's whether it's noticeable or whether it's significant.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch a word of that. I think all three of you spoke at once.
I think we're all agreed that any program that's running on top of something else has to be using some CPU time. There's no question of that. It's whether it's enough to be noticeable or cause deterioration to the point of something not functioning the way it previously did. I've run antivirus on my Macs since day one, and I've never seen a dip in performance. I occasionally have had issues whereby when I first installed something, the always on has made a few things lag, switched it off, switched it on. Sometimes I've just taken it off and done a fresh install of the software, and that solved my problem as well.
Wait here. Let me just follow me down this path. I'm just looking for yes or no. So are we in agreement that antivirus programs going back into the 90s on Windows slowed it down noticeably, and especially software to software, you could say this antivirus program affects you. You know, Norton is bloated, Not 32 is light. There's a performance hit that's noticeable. Do we agree there?
There were certain programs on my old PCs that I used to have, and they were Norton Ghost, for example, was just, it was, there was nothing ghostly about it. It was a poltergeist.
Well, not Ghost, not Utilities, not Defrag, not System Tuner, not, I'm just any talking antivirus. Kind of stuff.
Yeah, antivirus included. I mean, the whole of Norton was a pain in the ass, and you couldn't get it off without getting another program from Norton. It was awful, awful customer relationships.
Okay, McAfee then. I'm just saying, I mean, as far as I can ever remember, it's been a known fact of Windows. My next question was going to be, do we still have it in 7 and Vista? Because I haven't kept up with those. I've been just using Windows Defender. I have no mechanism of testing what the speed performance hit on there is. But I'm trying to explain my logical path here. So Don't we agree that antivirus in the past bogged down performance, the way it scanned your emails, scanned every executable, it harmed the user in order to protect him? Yes.
I think it's questionable as to how often that was noticeable. I think there have always been lousy antivirus programs and there have been good antivirus programs, and some of them were too bloated and sluggish, but I don't think you can tar all of them with that same brush.
But say yes, right? I mean, just it existed. It's a known thing. I'm not making it up, right? We know that existed, that people said that.
Yeah, people complained sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure people still do complain, Eric. That's not what we're saying. We're not disagreeing with you on that point. You know, there's a point coming through in the chat here that someone says, I agree with Eric, plausibility is not evidence of reality. And I don't think anyone is disagreeing with you on that at all with this. My point is, I just don't understand avoidance without confirmation when there's no downside. Where's the downside in this? Because we're not talking about something that's going to hog your CPU time here.
Do you guys all run encryption on your Macs? On your laptops, for instance?
No.
FileVault.
You're running FileVault, okay. And you, Mark?
No, I do not.
No.
I'm not running.
So, I mean, first of all, I'd recommend you all did. But Eric, do you find that FileVault slows things down?
I'm not able to compare because I only just started it on a MacBook Air, which is already light years faster than any hard drive-based laptop I've owned.
Okay. I mean, obviously, it's doing more than a computer is, which isn't running FileVault because it's doing the encryption and decryption, etc. But you're doing it for a very sensible security reason, because if you lose your MacBook, you don't want someone being able to access your files and, you know, cause nuisance. And I think it's the same story with antivirus. You know, there might be a slight hit. You should give it a try to see if it finds anything. And, you know, God forbid that you get infected, but let's hope, you know, that it's there as your safety net should anything bad happen, or should you ever be social engineered. But I don't think there's that much to lose, especially when it's not just us, but, you know, there are free solutions out there now.
I've never lost a drive, but I still back up.
Right.
I don't actually know. I don't know to speak to any person who's lost a 3.5-inch hard drive. I have no experience of someone losing a 3.5-inch hard drive, yet I still back up.
Oh, well, I mean, I've lost a number of them, but I feel like it's more like you're saying that you're containing your hard drives within some kind of fireproof barrier for the risk of spontaneous combustion, but there's no evidence that there's ever been a spontaneous combustion of a hard drive. I just don't see where these viruses are, and I don't see where it sounds like the likelihood of a Mac user getting struck with a virus is the equivalent of getting hit by lightning. But it's as if the lightning strike, the worst it did was maybe jolt you a little bit, and then you're like, okay, I should go to a doctor, get a checkup. It doesn't sound like once you've been struck, anything bad happens. Not to the point where you should bog down your system
The point, Eric, is no one is disagreeing with you. What they're saying is, why the hell are you stood in the field in a lightning storm holding a metal rod? Why would you do that? You haven't been struck by lightning. I've stood in this field for 25 years holding this metal rod. I've never been struck with lightning. What's the problem?
But we all agree that there's lightning. We agree on the risk. I don't agree there is a risk. And let's suppose that all that lightning did was just kind of make your hair stand on end. Then we all would stand on the field. There'd be no risk. Lightning would have no risk. It seems to me like the viruses that Mac users can get, or the malware, are so inert, they just install a botnet in the background, or they just wait and hide or something, that it seems like the most cautious a person would do, the most cautious person should do, is maybe run a full system scan like once a month, but otherwise don't have it running constantly and don't pay big bucks for one.
I think we're kind of slightly going around in circles here, but yeah. I think that, you know, that would be true if nothing ever changed from this point forward. The reality is, though, that the install base of OS X is growing massively, and the vast majority of people don't protect themselves. Those two facts alone make it very, very attractive. So we're not in a situation where the situation as you describe it is stationary, that there is, you know, a massively sort of fertile ground, and increasingly so, for attack. So for that reason alone, the need to protect yourself should, to my mind at least, logically become more pressing.
It's like someone coming up to you and saying at a party, excuse me, you need to leave the room, there's a bomb in the room, and you're saying, look, I'm not leaving till we see the bomb. I mean, there's a point here. Eric probably doesn't engage in risky behaviour in the chat room. This is, let's keep that in mind. Our relatives are probably unaware that good practices are, and are probably at a higher risk as well as. And I've got to speak from my mother's own. She's a 76-year-old woman who got her first Mac 2 years ago, loves it to bits, goes everywhere on the net with it. I come back and there's crap all over the desktop that Christ knows where she's got it from. But she goes click happy. And the reason I got her on a Mac was because there was no way she was going to be doing that on a PC. Not a chance in hell. But I still run Sophos antivirus for her on a desktop because my mum doesn't care about performance, but it doesn't sap performance. But, you know, I sleep easier knowing that I've got back to my Mac setup so that I can go and help my mum with tech support when she needs it and not worry about something coming back down the pipe to my own stuff. Because she is click happy.
If your theory's right, Eric, why did the guys in Cupertino, why did Apple introduce rudimentary malware protection into OS X? Why did they do it there? Because there's a huge marketing hit in them acknowledging that there's a malware problem on the Mac, but they introduced it. If people aren't going to encounter this stuff, if it doesn't really cause a problem anyway, why did they do it? And why did they then update it to handle some more Trojans as well?
Another point in the in the chat room. This is a person who said they ran no antivirus on their stuff, who has now decided to run antivirus on their stuff, saying that Sophos currently hits the CPU for 27%, but when I start Photoshop, it gives up the cycles very, very happily.
And what some people do is when they first install our software, they scan their entire drive, and that's obviously a much more intensive process. The normal way in which we would actually recommend running it is not doing a sort of regular full scan of the drive. Just run it in the background, whereupon it will intercept every file you open and just very quickly check it for malware.
What did the Mac malware do? Let me ask you that. What do they do once they're on there?
What does Mac malware do?
Mm-hmm. Steal stuff.
Yeah, it steals stuff, or it redirects your browser, or it opens a backdoor for hackers to gain access to your computer, whereupon they can, you know, do whatever they like. It's like they're sitting in front of the keyboard. They can read your email. They can see what's on your screen.
The standard stuff, I think, would be.
Yeah, it's the same stuff that we see Windows malware doing. So they can send spam. They can launch denial of service attacks. If you're part of a botnet, you know, they don't really care whether you're running a PC or Linux or an Apple Mac.
You know, there's another side to this. It's suddenly dawned on me is, you know, viruses, and again, this is more of a Windows thing, but historically, I think had a lot more press because they were much bigger events. They were self-replicating. Hundreds of thousands of people were being hit within a 24-hour period. And those days have largely sort of gone now. The viruses are these days much more specialist. They're much more targeted. So, you know, you may be infected by something, not because you clicked on a link, but because somebody somewhere actually wanted to get to you. Now, I am, picking at straws a little bit there, but the fact still remains that you can go to certain sort of Russian websites and have a Trojan written just for you that will be guaranteed to go under you know, the whatever protection you choose, really, for just, you know, a certain amount of dollars. And I'm certain that if you wanted to, you know, obtain those kind of attacks by platform, you could achieve that on, you know, far more than just the Windows platform. I'm certain of it.
And we've seen cybercrime forums where the criminals are saying, you know, you can rent our botnet and this is how much it will cost you per Apple Mac. They specifically say, some of these forums, you know, if you want to infect Apple Macs, this is how much it's going to cost you per Mac that we will infect and take over.
And how many Macs are infected?
No, we don't know, because they're not running ruddy antivirus software, are they?
We've kind of established that, I think. On that point, I think that's been a really good conversation. I mean, you know, it's nice to challenge stuff, definitely, and understand why you want to go about doing something and why you don't. Graham, thanks ever so much for coming along and talking to us.
Pleasure.
It's been a fabulous conversation. I hope you'll come back at some point.
I'd love to. Yeah, it's been good fun.
Despite the fact that we're giving you a hard time. Tell us a bit about Sophos, though, because, I mean, you've given up your time free of charge to come and talk to us, so please go away and plug the company a little bit.
Oh, goodness, I hate talking about our company. We're a computer security company. We do fight viruses, spam, on a multitude of different operating systems, but probably most of interest to your readers is we have a free antivirus for Mac, which you can get at sophos.com/freemacav, all one word. And there are some videos up there where you can see Mac malware in action. Give it a try and, you know, try and stay safe, guys.
And as a special deal, all Bagel Tech listeners get it free of charge.
if you're a home user, yes.
Oh, okay. We need to have a chat afterwards about how I'm breaching the license agreement wildly. Eric, where can we get a hold of you, mate? Just plug yourself a little bit.
Twitter.com/EricLanigan or EricLanigan.com, EricLanigan.
And at the Twit Network with Tech Talk, back a great little phone in on 9 o'clock, is it, on Pacific?
Yep, 9 Pacific on Thursdays, 12 p.m. Eastern.
Good man. And last, Mark?
Hi, I'm at Mark Sunner on Twitter, MarkSunner, like the season.
An occasional security expert for the Bagel Tech Network. Thanks so much, mate. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll have another of these, hopefully, in a bit future when Eric's infected.
I guarantee you I will come on and tell the world that I've been infected by a Mac virus malware or Trojan the instant that it happens.
No, dude, you'll be eating shoe leather. Trust me.
Eric, I promise not to email you it, okay? Tempting as it is.